You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, September 15th, episode 3775, brought to you today by Worm Flooring.
Welcome to our second annual Poop Week, brought to you by Zoetis Equine. Good morning, Horse World.
You've heard of Shark Week. Well, now there's something even more sinister. Welcome to Horses in the Morning Poop Week. Yeah, an entire week talking about your horse's poop. Buckle up for a slippery ride.
Don't you love how your horse uses their poop as their opinion? My gelding is extremely tidy. He poops in one area, he pees in one area, and he has his food where he likes to eat in another area. And everything is copacetic until he is unhappy. Then he will let you know if the water bucket is too dirty, poop. He will let you know if he did not like his grain, and he will poop in it. And he will even poop on his hay that he doesn't like. In my case, inside the portagrazer. Oh, don't we love how our horses use their poop as their opinion.
Yes, we do love how horses use their poop as their opinion. So thank you and joining us this year for our second annual Poop Week. You know what? We shovel it, we study it, we test it, we move it, we spread it, we compost it, we throw it at each other as teenagers. Yep,
no,
it's horse poop. You didn't?
No.
I thought all teenagers threw it at each other.
No. Not everybody. That's a boy thing, okay? Boys.
All this week, we'll be discussing poop, how to make it healthier, how to move it, how to compost it, and all things horse poop. We have guests joining us from all aspects of the horse poop world. They were so excited to be on, too. And how it's going to work is we're going to have guests and also a lot of random information you never wanted to know about poop. We're going to flood you with poop information this week. And I think we kind of own Poop Week. I think we're probably the only ones in the world that do a Poop Week. We own
this
that.
This is, again, from Glenn's brain, not mine.
So never fear, we'll still have some weird news and some really bad ads at the end of the week. But today, we're going to talk all things deworming with Dr. Sage of Zoetis Equine. Plus, on Horses in History, we look at how the Romans handled all their horse poop, and they have a lot of it, and how they advanced they were in nutrition for their horses. They were surprisingly advanced. So we're going to talk about that today as well. But we got some normal stuff to do, and one of those normal things is this. Happy birthday to auditors Bailey Collins, Thea Knott, who is Ashley's mom. Happy birthday. Debbie Payne and Joanna Stepka. Happy birthday to all of you. And now I have officially replaced it so I don't screw up. Here you go.
It makes me laugh every time. I feel like you cut off the last note, though. You're going to have to redo it. It's not acceptable. So I would like to give my daily whinny. This has got to be a first to my older brother. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah, it's definitely a first.
He called me about a week ago and he's like, I'm sending you something in the mail. I fully expect you to throw it away, but I thought you should see it.
Oh, no.
Well, so my dad is retiring from 9,000 years of being a State Farm agent. My brother works for him, so he's having to go through his office.
He has to hold a record, your dad, for being a State Farm agent.
He was brought up on stage as the longest ever.
He needs a Guinness World Book of Record there.
He's 80. It's time to retire, Dad. Not that my dad does any work at all. My brother does everything. So my brother's having to go through his office and get rid of stuff and start to move stuff and whatever. So I get this thing in the mail and I'm like, oh God. And I open it up and it was a full size bumper sticker. And it says Rolex Kentucky 3-day event 1996.
Was that the first one you went to?
No, I went to ones in the 80s, but I just thought, like, most people would have just tossed it. My dad kept that, like, and just filed it, I guess, and because I think my dad went with me that year. So, yeah, 1996, that was, like, looking back at that, it's like when my parents were in the throes of divorce hate, and, like, I was just hating my life. I think 96 I had moved to, I lived in Lexington. And so he must have come up and bought that bumper sticker. I don't know when it happened, but I don't know. It was really cool to get a piece of something that old, even though it seems like 5 minutes ago to me. And I was like, oh my God, 1990, do the math. That's like almost 20 years ago. What happened to my life? No, 30 years
ago. So I was just going to say, you're counting wrong, girl.
It hurts.
Yeah, definitely 30.
Oh, no. I was like, that's only 20. It's 20 years ago. That's so long ago. Wait, hold on. That means it's that long since I've done high school math. 30 years ago.
It's nice of your brother to do that, though. We got to give him some credit.
That's why I gave him a day of money. I thought it was real sweet. And again, wow, my hands are sweaty now, just realizing how long ago that was.
30 years ago. That means you started going to Rolex, if you did in the 80s, 40 years ago. Here, I'll cleanse your soul with some talk about poop. How about that?
Oh, good. Let's clean up with the poop.
Facts and figures about poop. This is what I found out with my research. Did you know that a 1,000-pound horse will average 8 to 10 piles a day? You all knew that because you cleaned it up. It does seem low. I think my pony does 20. It's like, seems like he does a lot every day. On average, a horse produces between 35 and 50 pounds of manure per day. That seems about right because a wheelbarrow, after cleaning up after one day, probably seems like about 50 pounds. I think that seems about right. Taking an average of 3 weeks to produce its own weight in poop. So think about that. Every 3 weeks, your horse produces its own weight in poop.
Oh, man.
Approximately 9 tons per year per horse, or get this, 450,000 pounds over an average 25-year lifespan. That's a lot of poop. A horse will typically, what it does say is that, and I didn't realize this, that stallions and young foals will poop more frequently than any other horses. I didn't know that. I didn't know that young foals poop more often.
I didn't know that they poop more often foals. I haven't noticed that with butters, but the stallions. Remember Thor, my old Mustang?
Yeah, yeah.
He was a wild stallion for 4 years, and he never got over the poop on other horses' poop thing. Even though he was a gelding and for years. Yeah, and I had him for years, and he always, if somebody pooped, he walked over and pooped on it.
Huh.
I'm like, boss gelding right there. Yeah.
So here are some annual statistics when you take into account all the horses in the United States. So the average manure production, as we said, is 1,000 pounds per horse. A 1,000-pound horse produces 50 pounds of manure daily. So that's about 9 tons annually. You take that times the 9 million horses in the United States, it's 450,000 tons of manure a day just in the United States from the horses we have here.
Think of all of the elements that we're adding back into the soil. So
good
you're
or bad.
Well,
depending on what you feature.
Let's not go to cows. You're like, they're way worse than horses.
It's 164 million tons annually of horse manure in the United States. That's just a number you can't even, that's a big pile. It's a big pile.
That's a big pile. Well, really big pile. One pile, that would be really big.
So how it works is, and I think we all know this, but they swallow the food. It enters the stomach where very little digestion actually takes place. And then it spends as little time as 15 minutes in the stomach before moving on. The stomach's primary role is to liquefy the feed and to aid in breaking it down a bit before it heads into the small intestine where absorption of nutrients begin there. It spends 1 to 3 hours in the small intestine where simple sugars, fat, soluble vitamins, and proteins are all digested and absorbed. And then it moves on to the large intestine where fermentation of fiber, happens and the, you know, the breakdown of fatty acids and all of that stuff. So, which is important for the energy of your horse. After almost all the nutrients have been extracted, the feed enters the small colon where water absorption and fecal balls form. We all know that because we know what happens when they get stuck. And then it's ready to be passed through the rectum. In total, it takes between 36 and 72 hours for a bite of food to be transformed into manure and come out the other end.
I do know that I did know the 15-minute thing, because when your horse overeats and gets into the grain, you have to get it out, you have to flush the stomach within 15 minutes. And ask me how I know. Okay, well, let's not go there. I will tell you that I don't know like how you poop manage at home, but I will tell you that something I do different at my house with manure I've had to explain myself a lot recently, because now I've got some friends riding, I've got a new farm girl, I had to explain myself. So in the cross ties at every barn I've ever been at, there's a manure fork and a bucket. And so you pick up the poop in the cross ties and you put it in the bucket.
Yeah, we have the wheelbarrow nearby, so it goes in the wheelbarrow. Yep.
Okay. Well, I don't do that. And explaining it to somebody who has worked, like my new farm girl, like she's worked for all of the top riders. She's been a working student. She's done lots of stuff.
Barns with the fancy floors.
Yes. And this has been really hard for her to understand. And also I have a girl who comes out and rides every week, and she's the hunter jumper. Okay. So we're talking, she's all the things hunter jumper. And so when a horse poops in the cross ties here, they're like, "Hey, where's the manure bucket? Where do I put it?" And I'm like, "Listen, if you were to pick up that manure and put it into a muck bucket, somebody then has to come around and pick up the entire muck bucket full of wet poop and put it into the manure, you know, wagon or whatever. And every barn I've been at has had that bucket, and somebody has to pick it up and dump it, and then they put it back in, you know? Well, I don't have staff. So anybody who's going to pick up the manure bucket is me. And I'm not going to do that. And so it's very freeing when you own your own farm to do what you want with the manure. So, I mean, you scoop it out of the thing and then you just toss it, throw it into the earth. It goes, return to nature.
Okay, so I'm assuming your cross ties are not inside the barn.
No, they're not inside the barn, but if they were, just throw it in a stall. That'll get picked up. But no, they're right outside the barn, and there's a paddock behind on one side and then the arena on the other side. And so I'm like, just chuck it. I'm not picking up a bucket full of wet poop. It's just not going to happen. And I'm telling you that this is very hard for these girls to
do. I bet it is. Like,
really, really difficult for them to do.
They'd have gotten fired if they had done that.
Oh, yeah. With Farm Girl, I was like, pick it up. And she picks it up on the fork, and I'm like, throw it. And she's like, I can't. Throw it into the paddock, into the grass, into somewhere, because I'm not picking up a bucket of wet poo. It's just not going to happen. So anyway, I wanted to explain myself publicly for why I do that, because I don't have staff. I am staff.
Let the shaming begin.
Bring it on. I don't care. It's my house. You know what? It's my house. My rules.
All right. Let's hear from Worm Flooring, and then we're going to go into our first guest of Poop Week.
Let's face it. Traditional floors and trailers, barns, and workshops take a beating. Remember the poop thing we mentioned? Well, they crack, they leak, they collect dust like nobody's business. And those temporary fixes, well, they never last. So introducing a revolutionary solution, Worm Flooring, W-E-R-M Flooring. Worm Flooring is a sealed system that's easy to clean and maintain. No more back-breaking scrubbing. Plus, it's slip-resistant, keeping you and your horse safe and sound. And unlike other options, Worm Flooring is built to last. Liquids, no problem. Worm Flooring protects your floor and keeps it looking beautiful for years to come. Don't settle for a floor that's a constant hassle. Invest in Wurm flooring today. Visit wurmflooring.com. That's WERM flooring.com to learn more and transform your space. Wurm flooring, the lasting solution for a beautiful floor for your barn, trailer, and more. And again, ask me how I know, because I have Wurm flooring and it's been in there for over a year now and it looks amazing. And I love it so much and I would never go back. It's awesome.
Well, we welcome as our first guest here at Poop Week, Dr. Abby Sage, equine technical service veterinarian for Zoetis, our title sponsor for Poop Week. And we thought, what a better way to start Poop Week than talking about worms.
I mean, let's do it.
So, Dr. Sage, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Now, from what I read of your bio, you've spent a lot of time talking about worms over the years.
Actually, I don't know exactly how it happened, but parasites have always been a part of my life.
Did you grow up thinking, I'm going to be a parasite expert someday?
No, but somehow in my graduate degree, I ended up working on malaria, which is a parasite. And then things just went from there. I ended up teaching about parasites, and they're just, you know, they're fascinating.
Well, I'm glad you think that, because your whole career has been based on it here. So, you know, obviously we've talked about deworming a lot on the show over the years and how there's issues, you know, related to that now. So I'm just going to start with, what's the current state of deworming? Where are we at?
Well, things have changed a bit, Glenn. We now think that we should not be deworming just haphazardly. We want to have targeting deworming now. So it used to be that we would just deworm every couple of months. We'd go down to our local feed supply, buy whatever was there. We just make sure we switched it up. And
let's be honest, they bought whatever was on sale. That's what we bought, right?
That's so. Right. That was our deworming program.
Yep.
But now, because of resistance, we want to make sure that we're much more targeted in our approach.
Meaning what?
So now we recommend, and actually it's the American Association of Equine Practitioners that came up with these guidelines, that we recommend that all horses, be dewormed twice a year. So once in the spring and again once in the fall. But in addition to that, all horse owners should have fecal egg counts done on their herd. And those that are considered high shedders, which have over 500 eggs per gram, should get additional dewormings depending on where they live. So if they're up north, they would have one additional worming in the summer. If they're in the south where the grazing season is longer, then they would probably have two additional wormings. So a total of four for those horses.
And getting the fecal egg counts, I know there's companies that do that and your vet can do it. Is there any does it matter? Which one?
Well, we really recommend that you have your vet involved, because just getting those numbers doesn't really tell you what you need to know for your whole herd and how best to manage it. We also recommend that some herds do what's called a fecal egg reduction count. So this way we can look for resistance to a particular dewormer. So your veterinarian may decide that would be appropriate for you. And so having a professional work with you is probably the best way to get the best advice, and then to have the best use of your dewormers.
I have seen the people that have a lot of horses. Some of them say, well, do I really need to get all my horses tested, or can I just, they're all out together, can I just test one or two and then treat them all the same?
Well, we like to target the high shedders. Those are the ones, let me just take a step back. So we're not trying to get rid of all the parasites in the field or in every horse. What we're trying to do is just decrease the amount of contamination on the pasture, so the amount of eggs that are there that would reinfect a horse. So we're never going to get rid of all of the eggs, but what we want to do is get rid of the number of them. So by targeting those high shedders, and the only way to tell who's high and who's low is to actually do a fecal egg count on every single horse. Once we know who's the high shedder, then those are the ones we target with more dewormer.
So I get the test back, and what's it going to show, the fecal egg count test?
It'll tell you how many grams, how many eggs per gram that your horse has in its fecal sample.
And how do we interpret that?
Yeah.
So if they are under 200, that's considered a low shedder, and that horse only needs to get dewormed in the spring and the fall. If they are over 500, those horses are considered high shedders, And if you live up north, you'll want to get them dewormed again in the middle of the summer. And if you live down south, you probably want to do two additional ones in the summer, you know, two or three months apart so that you can spread that out. The idea for that is that we're trying to decrease the amount of eggs that those high shedders are putting out on the pasture.
So how do I know which type of, because I mean, you go to the feed store or any online retailer and you go to buy dewormers and there's fenbendazole and there's Panacure and there's ivermectin and there's Quest, there's all the different brand names and all the different types of dewormers. So how do we know which one corresponds to what we're needing?
Well, that's exactly why you need to work with your veterinarian, because they can look at your herd, they can look at what other horses in your area may have, and they can be the ones to best advise you. There's a lot of resistance to dewormers now because we haven't had really any new ones in many years. So we want to be sure that you're using the right dewormer that will get the parasites that your horse has. So we make a product called Quest, and then we make one in the fall called Quest Plus, and those actually will do a wide variety of parasites for adult horses. But if you're talking about foals and yearlings, you may want to choose other ones. And again, that's why we want to get your veterinarian involved.
Didn't Zoetis do a campaign, if I remember right, called like buy less dewormer or use less dewormer?
Exactly. So the idea is not to be just, you know, going out and buying dewormer on a regular basis and deworming your every horse that you have. This way we want to target it. So we want you to buy less dewormer. We really want most horses to only be dewormed twice a year. And so there's no reason to buy large quantities of dewormer, or some dewormers you need to give 5 doses to get the same effect you might with 1 dose. So we're just trying to make an awareness to people that we want to really think about how we deworm now.
Now, you mentioned the Quest being a springtime and the Quest Plus being a fall. I've used these dewormers for years. I had no idea that one was based on kind of that they were based on seasons.
Yes. So Quest in itself is moxidectin, and that gets a very broad spectrum of parasites, including the dangerous parasites of small strongyles. And then We recommend that for spring because that will really cover most of them. But then we recommend in the fall using Quest Plus. The Plus is praziquantel. It's just another parasiticide that is in that product, and that targets tapeworms. And fall is the best time to target tapeworms because they will then, if you can get rid of them in the fall, right after there is a cold snap or a frost, then you won't get any more tapeworms until come spring again.
So in most places in the country, do worms just die off in the winter? Or are they still, you know, we're going to rule out the south where I live. But, you know, most places in the country where it actually gets cold, do they die out? Are they even in existence in the winter?
So all horses pretty much have what we call encysted larvae of the small strongyles, and those will overwinter in the horse. And the Quest is actually the only dewormer that will get encysted strongyles in 1 dose. So those can still be present in the horse. Usually, even though they may shed eggs through the year, they will not develop in the manure. So the reason that we talk about poop week is because the eggs are passed in the manure. They become larvae in the nice warm sun out in the pasture, and the horses, because they graze that grass around there, will get reinfected. So in the winter, if you're in a place where it gets cold enough, then those larvae will not develop all winter. So they will not become reinfected during the winter. If you're down south, though, depending on the temperature and the weather and the climate that year, you probably do have they're probably exposed all year.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Quest and Quest Plus as not safe for yearlings or foals. Is that, can you expand on that?
Yeah, it is safe for foals over 6 months of age and yearlings, but they have different worms. They have, foals especially have roundworms, and we have some other products, Strongid and Anthelside, that are better for roundworms. They're better targeting. There's less resistance. Yearlings, we do kind of a little mixture between those two, depending on what the fecal egg count shows, what kind of parasites that they have. So if you go to our website, zoetis.com, and look up parasiticides or Quest or dewormers, there are really some great charts there about the age of the animal, the foals and yearlings, and when you should target what worms. It's very easily laid out there for you. And then there's also a map of the United States, and it will show you based on where you live, how often you should deworm. So there's lots of information on the website about all the dewormers and the different types of worms. So it's a really great resource for people that need some nice, it's got some nice infographics.
Oh my gosh, Glenn, we never stop learning. So I have a foal, I have a 5 month old now. And so I'm on zoetis.com right now. I'm like, oh my God, it's such a good tool. I had no idea that your website had all of this information.
Well, great. I'm glad that you found it. And yes, it's very nice because, you know, every horse is different. Every owner is different. Different environment. So it's nice to be able to look up your own, what's going on with your own animal and be able to figure it all out.
So obviously you're talking about poop in the field, poop in the stall, right? Most of us clean the stalls and it probably goes in a manure pile. And, you know, we've talked about that in the past too. But the poop in the fields, I have a question for you. Do I pick it up, put it in the manure pile, or can I just spread it, like rake it out? What do you recommend?
So either one, Glenn, will work. What we want to do is make sure that those parasite eggs are not sitting in a nice warm pile of poop and nice and moist and able to become larvae. So picking it up and getting it out of the field is probably the very best thing that you can do. And we want to do that every about 3 days because that's how long it takes the eggs to hatch into larvae. You can also drag it as long as it's, you know, nice and flat and it's sunny and warm and it will dry that up. If it's moist and, you know, you have temperate climate, they may still be able to become larvae. So you want to just make sure that, you know, it's very well dispersed throughout the field. But generally picking it up is probably the best way to go about it.
So when you pick it up, I have a compost pile in the back and everything goes into that pile. So what I do is I let it sit there and cook and, like, you know, so about once a year, we take the previous year's compost and put in the manure, spread it on the field. Am I reinfecting my horses doing this?
As long as your compost pile gets warm enough, and that would be a whole nother topic for a really great podcast. As long as it gets warm enough, it will kill off the larvae. So that is fine. And usually within a year, if it's a big enough pile and it gets hot enough, that should be fine.
I'm in charge of dragging the horse husband here is in charge of dragging the paddocks. And I do it once a week. And now I realize I'm not doing it often enough.
What you need to do, Glenn, is you need to take your horse husband self and get yourself a fork and go out there and pick the field. Okay.
I really like the dragging part because I get to drive the tractor around really fast. So
I pick my field and it's the best exercise I have ever gotten. It's great. And I get to go out and see my horses every day.
Lemons out of lemonade, Glenn. She is spending quality time with her animals, getting healthy exercise. Get your fork.
Well, and then I can look at their poop and make sure they're healthy.
I can see it from the tractor. I really can. I can. Tractor's not that big. Dr. Sage, you've been great. Thanks so much for joining us. It's zoetisequine.com is where you can find all of those cool charts and everything that she talked about. And thank you guys for sponsoring Poop Week for us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
So our listener, Betty Faye, from Colorado, and she's been listening to us, I think, since we started 15 years ago. It seems like we've known her forever. You had a horse. She got a horse from you, and you got a horse from her, right? Both?
I mean, the Duke came from Betty.
Yeah, that's right.
Forever, like 14 years ago. And Betty is also the person that when... Remember the whole experience with the horses being loose and it was like a billion degrees like a month ago, 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And I went out and I captured the horse and I said, I deserve a medal.
Yes.
Well, Betty Faye sent me a medal and it's like a dinner plate size medal. And it makes me so happy.
Funny.
I've got it hanging in my bathroom on the towel rack. So I see it every single day, like multiple times a day. I love it so much. So that is Betty Faye. She's like part of the family. I love her so much. And I didn't know she sent in a story.
Yeah.
So
so I can't wait. I asked for your poop stories. She sent in one that involves a dog, and I have to give a trigger warning here because we've all done this, and we've all done it, but she tells the story so well. So here you go.
I am just like most horse girls. I don't have just horses. I always have pets, too. My poop week contribution is an event that happened last winter when my 2-year-old boxer developed diarrhea. I cleaned up a mess earlier in the evening. I should have realized that was foreshadowing. Later, I was getting ready for bed and wanted to give Casper another opportunity to go outside. I moved from the bedroom to the front door in the dark and called the dogs. Sergeant Reckless, my corgi, trotted right up, but Casper stayed on his bed under the living room windows, determined not to move. He was exhausted from dealing with a tummy ache. As I reached the front door and the switch to turn on the lights, my bare foot landed squarely and firmly in soft, disgusting, really smelly poop. The vile mess even worked up between my toes. Cursing like a sailor and not wanting to move, I called Casper, who decided getting near a raging woman was dangerous. He stayed put and tried to disappear. So what to do? Hop on one foot? That would have worked 6 months ago, but thanks to an autoimmune disease I'd recently developed, giant cell arteritis, and the side effects from prednisone, I developed drop foot, and I have no balance. I struggle to lift my toes on my left foot and trip easily. Even walking on my heel wasn't working. So there I was, trying hard not to, but ultimately tracking doggy diarrhea all over. First to Casper, who I had to drag from his bed to the door, then to the kitchen for paper towels. There was a ridiculous amount of dog crap all over my living room and kitchen floors. I did the best I could by wiping my foot and then collecting the poop my foot left behind. The smell was the kind that automatically makes you want to retch, and with my poor vision, I had to really bend over close to my foot to be sure I cleaned it all off. So I got a really good whiff. After washing my feet, I got to mop the floor. It took a while to get drowsy again, and I didn't manage to fall asleep for another hour. Casper was better the next day, but I couldn't get clean enough. Not all drama is life-threatening or painful. Sometimes it's just gross. I am a sad old lady with dog crap on her foot. Betty Faye.
We've all had it squished between the toes.
I was wearing socks at the time, and they got thrown away.
Just throw them away.
But we've all just done this. It. We've all done it because we've all had dogs have this problem.
I just had a similar situation to that dog that came up home for and gave my dog kennel cough. I feed the horses carrots at the fence line, and I was like.
Even on your shoes, it's bad.
And I was wearing shoes, and I was like, "Should I toss them? Yeah, I just throw them away."
If they're cheap sneakers, I did. Oh God, we've all been there, Betty Faye. I'm feeling for you, girl. And well told, by the way. All right, let's do some poop history. So last year we spoke about the Great Horse Manure Crisis of 1894, and that was about the cities being overrun with horse manure, New York and Philadelphia and all of those. And that was in the late 19th century. So this year I thought we'd go back much further in time. You hear about the Romans, right, Jamie? How smart they were, and they had aqueducts, and they were way ahead of their time when it came to their
version
of technology.
And you as a man, I've heard men think about the Roman times more than most, so I think this is very applicable.
It is.
About the Roman times.
So right around 0 to 400 AD is the time frame that we're talking about. And, you know, they were so advanced in so many things, I thought, well, you know, they had a lot of poop. They had a lot of horses. They were at war a lot, you know, used horses for transportation. They just used horses for everything. So my research suggests that the Romans had a multifaceted approach to handling the immense amount of manure that they generated in their cities and the farms and everywhere. They didn't really have a single clear-cut solution, but they used a combination of methods, which sounds familiar, doesn't it? Because don't we do the same thing?
Yep.
So here's a breakdown of what my research found. Manure was a valuable commodity back then, and it was used for agriculture. They were smart enough to know that manure was good for their fields. Roman writers on farming, such as Cato the Elder, who, by the way, if you know any Roman history, Cato the Elder must have written about 100,000 books because he's the only one they ever talk about in Roman history, writing things down. So he emphasized the importance of using animal manure as fertilizer to improve soil fertility and increase crop yields. And it wasn't unique unique to the Romans, but they were sophisticated in the way they did it. They actually understood that multiple animal manure was better than just horse manure. So they would actually combine different manures to increase its nutrient content. And there was actually, this is a guy named Camilla who wrote in a book in the first century. He said, horse dung is the hottest of all and should not be spread fresh on the soil, which we're going to talk about later in the week, by the way.
Oops, I've been chucking it in my pasture for this whole time.
We're
going to
talk about how that's bad later in the week. For it burns up the crops. It is best if it is mixed with other dung or allowed to rot. Yet it is very useful in meadows since it makes the grass grow thick. So this was written in the first century. The year, like, 100. Dried manure was sometimes used as fuel, especially in rural areas with fewer trees. Because remember, at that point, they were cutting down the trees for everything, houses and fire and warmth and all that stuff. So there was a distinct lack of trees in certain places around the Roman Empire. So in pre-industrial society, waste was often viewed as a resource. Now, get this. You're going to love this, Jamie. The same carts that brought the food and goods into the cities like Rome would then be used to haul the manure out to the manure piles at farms outside the city on the return trip.
I mean, they're all connected.
This says, I hope they washed them after, but I'm kind of, I don't know. This created a symbiotic cycle. Yeah, I'm sure it did. Where urban waste was repurposed for rural production. It's funny in this article how it didn't talk about how gross that was, because that's all I can think of. So while manure was a valuable agricultural resource, it was also a significant problem in the crowded cities. And unlike the 19th century, when horse manure became a crisis due to the sheer volume, the Romans kind of had it more figured out. And this was part, this cycle that they had with the carts was part of their way of dealing with it. So street waste, along with, you know, when we go to the Ren Fair, the one thing I always said that was missing at the Ren Fair was the smell. So in urban centers at that time, in the early Roman days and even in medieval times, horse manure along with human waste and other garbage was often thrown into the streets. So apparently in Roman times, there was a law against throwing things out of windows, but apparently there wasn't a lot of enforcement of that law. So everything went out the window into the street. Again, the smell in those days must have been something else. Palladius wrote in a book in the 4th and 5th century, dung should be collected and heaped together, for manure from different animals has different powers. That of the horse is light and soon spent, but it causes quick growth. So he was the second one to write about how horse manure causes quick growth. Now, they had, if you remember right, the Romans had sewage systems. They had very elaborate sewage and water systems and aqueducts and all that stuff. Well, it was illegal in Rome to put your animal manure in the sewage system. The only thing that went in the sewage system was wastewater and human waste. They were the only things that went in the sewage system. Apparently,
that sounds reasonable.
Yes, and apparently the fines were very high if you were caught doing that. So when they brought this dung out to the outskirts of the city, they were put in piles, and they were called middens, M-I-D-D-E-N-S, and large piles of waste known as middens or dumps, and they were common to the outskirts of the city. And they had a name for the people who were the middlemen who dealt in dung. They were the dung dealers, they were called. And it was stercquilinarii.
Don't try.
Yeah,
just
I don't know.
Move on.
They collected manure from urban areas and sold it to farmers. Can you imagine somebody says at the bar, while the pub, while you're having a drink, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm a dung dealer. Yeah.
We'll buy some poop.
The Romans, building upon Greek knowledge, demonstrated a surprisingly advanced understanding of horse nutrition. I found this more fascinating than the poop, actually. They really were up on horse nutrition. So they... Forage was a staple, and this was written in some of the texts. Like modern horse care, Romans understood that forage, grass, hay, and other fibrous plants were the cornerstone of a horse's diet. They knew that young green pasture was particularly beneficial for horses' health and appearance. Grain, they had grain. The Romans were well aware that horses engaged in hard work needed more fortification. So like if there were cavalry horses or pack animals, they needed more energy. And they supplemented forage with grains. They used barley was the most common choice in the Roman world. Oats were less common, but became more widespread after the first century. So they started using more and more oats. So Roman writers noted that feeding a horse a poor diet, such as only chopped straw, would lead the animal to breaking down under work. They understood that quality, not just quantity, mattered. So that was interesting
I've seen the movies, and they did a very good job feeding the Andalusians and Frisians that they only rode and used.
Right.
I mean,
yes, right, exactly.
They're everywhere, and they look so healthy.
They look so good. They had specialized diets and supplements. They understood the concept of calorie density that was written about and adjusted horses' feed based on activity level. So obviously the cavalry horse would get more food. Beyond barley and hay, Roman writers mentioned other foods for horses, including alfalfa. They recognized alfalfa was a better hay. Peas. Apparently peas were a big thing and they grew a lot of peas. I don't know if it grew well in sandy terrain or what, but they gave horses peas in the winter for better digestion. I don't know. I've never heard of peas being given to horses, but I need to look that up. Specialty items such as parsley, celery, and even a mixture of salt, honey, and pepper were fed to stimulate mares. Salt, honey, and pepper.
I know it stimulates me, baby. Give me some salt, honey, and pepper.
Veterinary medicine. They had horse doctors, and guess where the word veterinarian comes from? Veterinarius was the word for a horse doctor back in Rome. So veterinarian comes from the Roman term veterinarius. They had specialties, by the way. Some of them were surgeons. Some were general horse doctors. They treated wounds, diseases, and they handled the nutrition. So they would advise on nutrition. So the first veterinarians were really from Roman time. They recognized nutritional problems. Roman veterinary texts show an awareness of health problems linked to diet. The Roman writer Varro accurately described the cause and treatment of what we now call tying up. And it was linked to a horse being fed or watered immediately after exercise in those days, is what they thought caused tying up. It's kind of still the same today. Preventative care. They also took care to prevent injuries. Mosaics and reliefs on the walls of caves and things show racehorses wearing leg bandages. So they were actually using leg bandages back in Roman times. And you'll see that if you see, I looked at some of the pictures, and sure enough, right where our leg bandages are, they had leg bandages. They had wraps. So there you go. A lot of that dates back to Roman times and the history there. I just thought that the nutrition stuff was really interesting.
So I'm hearing leg bandages in the Roman times, and I seriously doubt that they had ceramic infused.
I doubt it.
You know,
no. I think it was
lining
more,
in their leg wrap.
It was more like polo wraps.
I mean, seriously, and we get so much crap about the different types of leg wraps. I'm going to go Roman style. That's what I'm going to start saying.
There you go. So theirs was a little bit of the history of Rome and how they handled poop and also how they handled nutrition for the horses. And we're going to talk more later in this week about how we handle nutrition today and also more about how we handle the poop today. And what are you really supposed to put it straight on the field? We're going to find out later in the week, as we have more guests to talk about horse poop. So that's what you have to look forward to this week. However, I thought, what can I do different this year to close out the shows during poop week? And I thought, well, let's get AI's help.
Oh, God.
And I had AI. I went to my favorite AI, Gemini, and I said, I want you to write 3 poems about horse poop. And we're going to play those out for our podcast. And I got to say, AI did better than I would have writing the poems about horse poop. And so what I thought I'd take it one step further, and I would have Ashley read the poems for us, but I told her to do it in her best AI voice.
Because
I thought that it would just be kind of it'd be fitting. So today we're going to play the show out with a poop poem called Ode to the Pile. Written by AI, read by Ashley, acting as AI. And in the Auditor Post show, we're going to switch gears totally and talk about the happiest states and see if we agree with them. Here you go.
The least poop states.
Yes, here we go. Here's the Ode to the Pile.
Ode to the Pile. In Rome or on a modern farm, a horse leaves gifts with rustic charm. No ribbon, bow, nor dainty wrap, just plop, a steaming, earthy slap. Some call it gross, I call it grand, a treasure trove for soil and land. From pastures green to gardens neat, the world's best crop starts at their feet. So when you pass that fragrant scoop, tip your hat, it's noble poop. For kings may reign and empires fall, but horse manure outlasts them all.
Oh, hard to follow that. Spin your tail, everybody.